Ukrainian troops say they're expecting a bitter fight for the southern Kherson region.
This Ukrainian soldier said Russian forces were digging in.
The Russians are changing positions. Our intelligence confirmed that they have been reinforced by many recruits, that they are strengthening their flanks, digging up trenches.
Plus, the Kyiv region's energy infrastructure is hit again.
For the moment, it's not really clear, at least according to the official statement, whether it was a direct hit or a hit by debris.
And later in the program, those helping civilians flee the fighting in areas located close to the war's front lines. Today is Thursday, October 27th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. The Moscow-appointed authorities in the southern region of Kherson say that tens of thousands of people have been evacuated in the face of Ukraine's offensives. From the Associated Press, Charles de Ledesma starts us off.
Governor Vladimir Saldo says over 70,000 residents of the city and nearby areas have moved to the left bank of the Dnieper River. Regional authorities have been urging residents to evacuate as Ukraine pushes its offensive to reclaim the city, which was captured by Russian forces during the early days of the conflict. The city's vice governor has told agencies Ukrainian attempts to advance on Kherson have been thwarted, insisting Russian troops will keep their hold on the city. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Ukrainian troops at the front line say on Wednesday that they're expecting a bitter fight for the southern Kherson region, which Russia now appears to be reinforcing after days in which it seemed possible that Moscow might withdraw. Reuters' Tamara Lindstrom takes it from here.
The looming battle at the mouth of the Dnieper River could determine whether Kyiv can loosen Moscow's grip on southern Ukraine. This Ukrainian soldier said Russian forces were digging in.
The Russians are changing positions. Our intelligence confirmed that they have been reinforced by many recruits, that they are strengthening their flanks, digging up trenches. They fear our air force, fear our artillery and soldiers.
In one section of the front, Ukrainian soldiers said Russian shelling was stepping up again after having tailed off in recent weeks. Radio intercepts indicated freshly mobilized recruits had been sent to the front. As tension mounts, both Russia and NATO are holding long-standing annual drills of their nuclear forces this week. But Russia has given the exercises a much higher profile than usual, timing it to coincide with its accusations that Kyiv is preparing to release nuclear material with a so-called dirty bomb, an allegation the West calls baseless and a potential pretext for Russian escalation. Russian state television broadcasts were dominated by footage of submarines, strategic bombers, and missile forces practicing launches in retaliation for an atomic attack. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu told President Vladimir Putin its forces will be ready to respond.
Comrade Supreme Commander-in-Chief, in accordance with the training plan for the armed forces of the Russian Federation, under your leadership, training is being conducted to oversee the armed forces of the Russian Federation, during which the tasks of delivering a massive nuclear strike by strategic offensive forces in response to an enemy nuclear strike will be worked out.
Kyiv says Moscow has been brandishing the prospect of nuclear war to intimidate Western countries into withdrawing their support for Ukraine. Since Russia began losing ground in a counteroffensive in September, Putin has taken a series of steps to escalate the conflict, calling up hundreds of thousands of Russian reservists, proclaiming the annexation of occupied land, and repeatedly threatening to use nuclear weapons to defend Russia. This month, Russia launched a new campaign of strikes in what it calls a special military operation, using missiles and Iranian-made drones against Ukraine's energy infrastructure, also hitting parks and homes across the country.
Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters News. Ukraine's general staff says it has bolstered its forces in the northern region near Belarus to counter any possible renewed Russian attack across the border. Belarus is Russia's main ally in the conflict and has allowed Russian forces to use its territory as a springboard to attack Ukraine. The regional governor in Kyiv region also says that that area faces a 30% deficit in its capacity to generate power after Russian strikes overnight targeting energy infrastructure. From the capital, Anna Chernikova joins us with more.
During the night period, there were additional attacks by Russian forces targeting critical infrastructure of Ukraine, and in particular the Kyiv region. So one of the critical infrastructure facilities was hit in the Kyiv region, and we know for the moment is that actually there are damages. So the governor of Kyiv region reported that the missile was destroyed. But either the debris of this missile or another missile hit the facility. So for the moment, it's not really clear, at least according to the official statement, whether it was a direct hit or a hit by debris. But anyways, what we know is that this actually created additional problems for the city of Kyiv and Kyiv region in general. What is the situation for the moment is that Ukrenergo, an electricity transmission system operator in Ukraine, they announced that due to this attacks, it is a need for additional decrease and increase of the limit of the supply of electricity and decrease of usage of electricity by the society. In Kyiv, the capital, and Kyiv, Chernihiv, Cherkass, and Zhytomyr regions. Basically, these are all regions in the central part of the country. According to them, the decrease should be 30% at least.
Anna, really quickly, there's been a lot of discussion as to whether or not a nuclear device may be used in the current conflict. How are people in Kyiv responding to those kinds of discussions on the international stage?
So in general, I should say that people in Kyiv do not really believe that this could happen at this point of time in this war. So a month ago, the feeling that this is actually quite a high danger was much higher. For the moment, it goes down. At least this is what I experience in here. And people really feel that international political community and international partners of Ukraine actually made it clear for Russian Federation regarding the consequences, and particularly people are saying about U.S.
As always, Anna, thank you very much for taking time to speak to us. We wish you well.
Thank you, Steve.
Australia says it will deploy troops to Britain to train Ukrainian forces. Phil Mercer has that story.
Australia has promised long-term support for Ukraine in its fight against the Russian invasion. A group of up to 70 Australian Defence Force personnel will join the British-led multinational training effort known as Operation Interflex in the next 2 months, but they won't operate inside Ukraine. Australia will also send an additional 30 Bushmaster armoured personnel vehicles to Ukrainian forces. They have an innovative V-shaped floor designed to spread the impact of explosions more effectively than a conventional flat floor. Australia has also sent missiles and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Defence Minister Richard Marles told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Thursday that Canberra is committed to Ukraine's war effort.
We're mindful that Ukraine needs to now be supported over the longer term if we're going to put Ukraine in a position where it can resolve this conflict on its own terms. And so this charge is very much focused on that, both in terms of making sure that we are helping in a UK-led initiative in respect of training and also extending the line of bushmasters that we will be providing to Ukraine.
Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba has thanked Australia for its assistance on social media. "We will always remember Australia's support," he tweeted. Earlier this week, Australia's federal budget pledged more than $129 million to Ukraine. Australia has imposed sanctions on hundreds of Russian politicians, including President Vladimir Putin, military commanders, and business people. Since February, Australia has granted visas to almost 9,000 Ukrainian refugees. Australia is the largest non-NATO contributor to Kyiv's war effort. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. With Russia curtailing natural gas supplies to Europe, the European Union is scrambling to find alternative sources. The EU is looking to gas providers like Azerbaijan to help fill the gap, but as Dorian Jones reports, Turkey is positioning itself to play a pivotal role in keeping the lights on and furnaces working in Europe this winter.
The European Union has a mammoth task ahead to replace Russian gas. In 2021, Moscow provided about half of the continent's gas supplies. Energy-rich Azerbaijan is one country that can help make up the shortfall, as EU leader Ursula von der Leyen declared in her July visit to the Azeri capital, Baku.
The European Union has therefore decided to diversify away from Russia and to turn towards more reliable, trustworthy partners. And I'm glad to count Azerbaijan among them.
Baku has already increased its supply to Europe by about a third. The gas supply is delivered through the Tana pipeline that crosses Turkey to Greece, linking up with Europe's pipeline network. As analyst Ilhan Uzgel of the news portal Kusar Dalga points out, that fact makes Turkey an important player in Europe's energy future.
All the pipelines are running through Turkey and, you know, they're connecting to the European pipelines. So it doesn't make Turkey a hub. Turkey is a trans country in this sense. They're coming up with many plans. Turkey could be an energy hub for many years. We have been hearing this rhetoric, but they're not realized.
An energy hub is a distribution center with storage facilities and the ability to become an energy exchange, reselling gas to different buyers. The importance of Turkey as a transit country is set to grow. Turkmenistan's vast gas reserves also are a potentially significant supply of gas to Europe. That gas could be piped west through Azerbaijan and the Turkish Tana pipeline. Energy expert and former Turkish ambassador to Qatar, Mithat Rende, says Turkey is considering projects to enhance its pipeline capabilities.
One of the projects could be to enhance the capacity of Tana, the southern gas corridor, and it could take place in maybe less than 2 years' time. The second project could be to bring Iraqi gas from northern Iraq. And there you need to build about 200 kilometers of pipeline. So it's not a big deal. But then you need the support of the federal government in Iraq. Then the EastMed gas can be also monetized. Israeli-Turkey gas pipeline.
Europe is already rebuilding its gas pipeline infrastructure to accommodate supply change. Attending the opening ceremony of a pipeline between Greece and Bulgaria, von der Leyen underlined the importance of such projects.
This pipeline is a game changer. It's a game changer for Bulgaria and for Europe's energy security. And it means freedom. It means freedom from dependency on Russian gas.
The Greece-Bulgarian pipeline is being supplied by Azeri gas delivered via Turkey. As Europe weans itself from dependency on Russian gas, it will increasingly, at least in the medium term, become reliant on Turkey as a transit country for its energy. Some observers warn that it could create its own challenges, given the EU's recent strained ties with Ankara. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Russia has launched its annual nuclear exercise against the backdrop of heightened rhetoric from Moscow, hinting at the use of a nuclear weapon against Ukraine. U.S. President Joe Biden has warned Moscow that the use of tactical nuclear weapons against Ukraine would be a very serious mistake, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Russia rehearsed its response to a nuclear attack Wednesday during annual exercises involving nuclear submarines, strategic bombers, and ballistic missiles, as President Vladimir Putin watched via video link. In recent days, the Kremlin has accused Ukraine, without evidence, of planning to release nuclear material with a so-called dirty bomb, capable of causing mass death and radioactive contamination. When asked whether Russia is preparing to launch such an attack and place the blame on Ukraine, President Joe Biden had this to say late Tuesday.
Russia would be making an incredibly serious mistake if we're to use a tactical nuclear weapon. I'm not guaranteeing you that it's a false flag operation yet. Don't know. But it would be a serious, serious mistake.
At the White House Wednesday, National Security Council Coordinator John Kirby said this.
We haven't seen any indications that the Russians are making preparations for the use of a dirty bomb or, quite frankly, the use of tactical nuclear weapons. I think that's important to get right out front.
Ukraine's defense minister, Oleksiy Reznikov, said he does not believe Putin will use a nuclear weapon against his country.
My personal opinion, he will not use nuclear weapon. They did a lot of stupid things, but they continue to be pragmatic.
Meanwhile, at the United Nations Wednesday, Emergency Relief Chief Martin Griffiths said he is relatively optimistic that a UN brokered deal allowing a resumption of Ukraine's Black Sea grain exports would be extended beyond mid-November. Griffiths said the deal is in everyone's best economic interest, including Russia's.
It was not intended at the time to be an operation which was all humanitarian. We understood clearly, and I think we've been borne out, that the impact of that rather elaborate and large export across the Black Sea has had a humanitarian impact on prices, as you know, as well as on quantities, as well as on confidence. And so it's doing what we negotiated.
The United Nations is working to extend the deal for up to a year and accelerate the joint inspections of ships by UN, Turkish, Russian, and Ukrainian officials. The UN recently reported a backlog of more than 150 ships. The grain deal package is crucial for many in developing countries as Russia's invasion of Ukraine has now entered its ninth month. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The possibility of Russia launching a nuclear attack in Ukraine or beyond has some Americans on edge. Some are going online to see what such an attack might actually mean. Anxiety is up, but experts say panic isn't justified. At least not yet. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias brings us that story.
She describes them as scary, but those threats that Russia might go nuclear in Ukraine aren't yet part of Jonah Wilson's chatter with friends.
No, we're probably talking about our Spotify playlists if we're not in class. Our grandparents and parents who may have grown up during the Cold War era I felt like the precipice of anxiety was a bit higher for that generation.
Those old worries seem to be making a comeback. A vast majority of adults polled by the American Psychological Association said they fear the beginning stages of World War III.
Back in March of 2022, 69% of Americans said that they were stressed that the attack on Ukraine could lead to nuclear war. It's unclear exactly what the sense of threat is, whether individuals really think that it's going to hit the shores of the United States versus this sense of, just catastrophic changes in the world.
These days, the potential consequences of a nuke, including deaths and contamination, can be easily visualized with a click of a button. Go online, select a bomb, map the target, and detonate. Alex Wellerstein, creator of the nuke map, spoke with VOA via Skype.
The traffic in the nuke map has gone up to essentially the highest it's ever been in 10 years. You have a lot of people in the United States and in Europe in particular who are trying to find out what nuclear weapon use might look like.
The hypothetical results are worrying, but fears about Russian President Vladimir Putin acting on his nuclear threats are overblown, says William Alberg, an expert on nuclear proliferation.
I don't think he would mobilize hundreds of thousands of troops at massive cost to the Russian economy and use nuclear weapons. It would be one or the other. The massive political and economic costs, in addition to military costs that Russia would incur with use, all combined to make any nuclear use scenario by Russia seem very, very remote at this time.
This is the painting. Melvin Hardy curated the Hiroshima Children's Drawings exhibit at the Phillips Collection Museum in Washington, D.C. Japanese kids who survived did the work 2 years after the first atomic strike. Some are still alive. Their scars, physical and mental, a reminder of the horror.
Many of them have been affected by radiation illnesses.
different kinds of cancers that they've had to manage or mitigate. Many of them would not want to speak to us. They did not want to relive that horror. There are others who are advocates to say never again. We must advocate against the use of nuclear weapons.
But the weapons won't go away soon. In fact, Moscow's nuclear arsenal will be in full display during the drills it holds this time of the year. The United States and NATO allies say they'll monitor, quote, very closely, as a jittery world stands by. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
An organization in Ukraine called Kharkiv Help helps civilians leave areas being shelled by Russians. Anna Kostachenko met with the volunteers in the Kharkiv region, which is about 10 kilometers from the front line.
Ukrainian volunteers from the organization Kharkiv Help are working in a city only 10 kilometers away from the front lines.
We're rescuing civilians and the wounded from the shelled areas. Our cars have been shelled many times.
Before the war, Maslow was working as a clothing designer in Kyiv. But after Russia invaded, he founded Kharkiv Help to help rescue civilians.
On day two of the war, I signed up to join the volunteers. I was with my mother in Kharkiv, and at the time, everyone was leaving the city. Hostilities were taking place. Russian tanks were entering the city, and help was needed here. So I didn't go to Kyiv. I stayed.
The volunteers include two young men from the United States who met each other 10 years ago and have been friends ever since. 21-year-old Karsten came here in March.
I've read about the conflict in like Donbass, and I've been reading about that since I would say like 2016 or 2017. So I already knew a bit about like what was going on here and the like separatism and just like the war in general. And now that it's gotten to this point where it's just become a massive like human catastrophe, I felt like it was time to do something about it.
In September, 20-year-old Lucas joined Karsten in Ukraine.
Just seeing how this war has developed, it's really become an unprecedented situation, like in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to help in any way that I could.
As Voice of America was filming this story, volunteers, including Karsten and Lucas, were tasked with removing a disabled woman out of the constantly shelled area. Voice of America is not naming the city, since Russian forces have targeted volunteer vehicles many times before.
Are you ready? Let's go!
Because the convoys carrying civilians have been shelled constantly, some locals refuse to leave when volunteers come for them, Maslow says.
A lot of people are scared. They hear about cases where civilians are shot. Some of them prefer to sit in terrible conditions underground and are afraid to move. 300 meters away, we have a bunker where about 15 elderly people are sitting.
Local resident Maya runs to volunteers when she sees them. She wants them to pick up two disabled people from the hospital where she works.
It'll be really cold soon, and they may freeze there and die.
There's no more space in the car, so that's a job that must wait until tomorrow. Anna Kostichenko for VOA News, Kharkiv Region, Ukraine.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay with the latest developments not only in Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well. Be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.